Rundown from WUFT News, exploring our community from top to bottom. I'm Kristen Shearmont-Spina. Coming up on the show, we'll hear from one of the coordinators of a high school club for Gainesville students who don't speak English as a first language. And later, a local blacksmith takes us on a tour of her workshop. But first, before we get into the show today, here are a few quick election-related headlines from this week's news. An amendment to expand property tax exemptions in Florida has hit a hurdle. It's titled Save Our Homes from Excessive Property Taxes. And on Monday night, a Tallahassee judge ruled its language is misleading and too promotional. So now it has to be rewritten. The Tallahassee judge gave the state attorney general 10 days to revise the language, but there could be an appeal. No matter what the language eventually becomes, Florida residents will vote on the property tax amendment in the November election. It would need 60% approval to be adopted. Early voting for Florida's primary election started on Monday for some counties, including two in north central Florida, Bradford and Putnam. Early voting begins in Levy County starting today, while Alachua and Citrus counties open up early voting tomorrow. Six counties begin their early voting period on Saturday: Columbia, Dixie, Gilchrist, Hernando, Marion, and Union counties. More details can be found on each county's Supervisor of Elections website. Many voters use Google to search for information about candidates on their ballot. But if you try to Google for information about one particular Republican Palm Beach county right now, you won't get the full story. WLRN's Danny Rivero has more on a complex scheme to suppress information about candidate Michael Carbonara.
Michael Carbonara is running as a Republican candidate in Florida's 22nd congressional district. And as WLRN has reported, Carbonara has deep ties to the data center industry. He's embroiled in a lawsuit in rural Michigan after he helped build a data center across the street from an elementary school. But if you Google Carbonara, articles on this will not show up. WLRN has found there's been a targeted campaign to scrub any articles critical of Carbonara from Google search results. Someone is filing fraudulent copyright violation claims to Google. And in response, Google is removing the search results from the eyes of would-be voters.
That's terrifying.
Corey Silverstein is a First Amendment attorney based in Michigan. He says whoever is making the fraudulent complaints are violating federal law.
This is absolute censorship, because this is information that the press has certainly a right to publish. It's protected under the First Amendment.
The primary election takes place on August 18th. I'm Danny Rivero in Miami.
Google nor the Carbonara campaign responded to WLRN's requests for comment on this story. This is the rundown from WUFT News. Florida has a lot of stories to tell. Do you know your community's history? It's time for a trivia question. Many people are aware that the Florida scrub jay is endemic to the state, meaning it's only found here. But which of the following other species is also endemic to Florida? Is it A, the Florida mouse, B, the gopher tortoise, or C, the Florida green water snake? Stay tuned to the end of the show for the answer. The start of the school year is right around the corner, and navigating a new high school system is hard. But doing it while learning a new language is even harder. So a group of University of Florida students are trying to lend a hand. They're continuing a program called ESOL Achievers. That stands for English for Speakers of Other Languages. They step in at Gainesville High School, where about 20% of students are enrolled in ESOL classes. Earlier this year, WUFT's Oriana Torre spoke with one of the coordinators, Elizaveta Ivanova.
ESOL Achievers is a mentoring and tutoring organization here at UF that has actually been around for a decade. Laura Mutis founded it. We're working to support these students and help them learn the language, English, and navigate the system of education.
You say that was almost like 10 years ago. So what would you say are the challenges now? Do you think are the same? What have you seen?
I have been part of this organization since my freshman year, and I have seen that the population has grown. That's why we're actively trying to always recruit more mentors, more tutors, and bridge that gap and have as many volunteers as we can to help all those students.
In your experience, What does it look like to be with them?
It's basically 5 days a week, normal school hours, like 8 a.m. to around 3 p.m. And they're able to step into the actual classroom and help the students with whether it be the ACT and SAT, which a lot of them have never seen in their life. And that's one of the biggest things that we've been able to help with. And also every subject matter, whether it be math, English, science.
So do you go to the schools or where do you meet?
Yes, we go to Gainesville High School and we go to each teacher's classroom and we help them.
What are some of the challenges ESOL students face that other students might not see or that might not understand?
I think one thing is a lot of students have the resources and access to get tutoring and are able to afford it. A lot of these students come from low-income Latino families and aren't able to access that. And that's where we bridge the gap. That's why we have all of our mentors and tutors who volunteer, step into the actual classroom. But we also do have a matching process where we match a UF student to an ESOL high school student. And they're able to meet outside of classrooms too.
Why you kept coming back and helping these students?
I feel that the more I go into the high school and help these kids, every single time I walk out so rewarded and so inspired. All of them are truly such amazing kids with big aspirations. And one memory that I love from every semester is our field trip. We do UF and Santa Fe. And I love going and seeing these kids go from like just pure confusion of what a college campus looks like and how it works and hearing about all of the admissions processes to feeling like they can actually belong in a college campus and that this isn't just a dream for them and a real possibility.
What does it mean to you to see ESOL students succeed?
For me, it's really inspiring that a lot of these students are able to go from just being confused and able to succeed and achieve all of their higher education goals. When they see an older student apply to Santa Fe, get in, and get into the specific program that they want to do, it helps a lot of the other students that are about to be in their shoes for the next year. And we want to keep this pattern and have them all really see that this is a possibility and not just their impossible dreams.
That was Elizaveta Ivanova, one of the organizers behind ESOL Achievers, a program that tries to help high school students learn English and prep for college. She was speaking there with WUFT's Oriana Torre. This is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. Coming up later in the show, we're bringing back another segment of our award-winning series called Uncelebrated, people who fly under the radar yet help our world turn. That's after a break. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina. During the slow summer months, we've been re-airing our now award-winning series from late last year called Uncelebrated. These are stories about people who fly under the radar but keep the world turning. The Public Media Journalists Association named it the best student program in America in 2026, so we thought we'd like to visit that series again this summer. On this week's episode, WUFT's Kira Carl introduces us to a Gainesville Regional Transit System bus driver.
My name is Edward Hines. I'm a transit operator for RTS. Yeah, I've been a train operator for 20 years.
Again, you gotta understand, this person has a mental breakdown. So you gotta understand.
How I became a bus driver, it's kind of crazy. My uncle started with RTS. He was the first founder driver to RTS. The rest is history, but this has been a journey. But they're in my life, very interesting. I get to meet a lot of interesting people. My favorite part is that I have an opportunity to meet people from all around the world. You gotta be a people person to actually do this job.
This bus served Route 52 to
What do I think about when I'm driving? Well, I'll be honest with you, they tell us not to think too much because you got to be focused on what you're doing, really. It's your job is to keep the bus moving, get the passengers where they need to go. Go through. And by you driving the same route, you get to know who the people are. And another thing that I noticed a lot of, you know, as time is really getting hard, one of the routes that I was driving, there was a mother. She had two kids in high school and one in middle school. She would get on, she would make sure the fare was paid for them. And you can do the math, $9 a day, 9 times 10, that's $90. And I requested for the next 6 months until your kids graduate, I'm gonna pay their fare. And she just broke down and started crying. She said, wow, I really needed that. Thank you. And that's one part of our job too. You know, you have to be compassionate because again, time is really hard for a lot of people. And another thing that when you really get to know your passengers and they get to know you, like I said, my mother just passed away about 5 months ago. And one of the passengers heard about it. So all of them, they signed a card, put a gift in there and everything, you know, condolence to you. So that meant a lot to me because they didn't know my mother, but they knew me. And that was just their way to say, hey, look, you know, we're praying for you. The impact that they have on me, we have an opportunity to change the way people look at you and them just saying hello, how's your day? Or just an interesting conversation that you can talk with them. Maybe you could be the one that makes their day better in just a simple conversation. Okay, guys, take care.
That was Edward Hines, a bus driver for RTS in Gainesville. His story is part of our series called Uncelebrated, People Who Fly Under the Radar Yet Help the World Turn. Do you have a person you think would be a perfect match for this series? Tell us about them in an email to feedback@wuft.org. This story was produced by WUFT's Kira Carl. To hear more stories from this series, visit us online at wuft.org/uncelebrated. If you're just joining us, this is The Rundown from WUFT News. I'm Kristen Shearmont-Spina. If you missed the first half of the show, no worries. You can always listen to previous episodes at our website, wuft.org/The Rundown. You can also find us wherever you get your podcasts. As a reminder, our trivia question this week. Many people are aware that the Florida scrub jay is endemic to the state, meaning it's only found here. But which of the following other species is also endemic to Florida? Is it A, the Florida mouse, B, the gopher tortoise, or C, the Florida green water snake? The answer's coming up at the end of the show. That's after a quick break and more stories from The Rundown, a behind-the-scenes tour of a local blacksmith's workshop, and another edition of Bird Note. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to The Rundown. I'm Kristen Shearmont-Spina. There are a lot of professions we don't hear much about these days. Milkman, ice delivery, farrier, and one of the more unique ones is blacksmith. But WUFT's Emiliano Luna found one right here in Gainesville and produced this story. She uses an induction forge to heat up and shape metal. And this blacksmith and artist also uses a self-built computer numerical control plasma cutter, also called a CNC, and other tools to bring her art to life.
All right, I'm just gonna throw on my welding jacket real fast. Hi, my name is Leslie Tharp. I'm a local metal artist in Gainesville. I've been in this little town since 2004. I got my bachelor's in fine arts degree from UF in 08, and I've just been making big metal sculptures ever since. And I definitely have a passion for mixing a lot of different metalworking techniques. So blacksmithing is definitely in the bucket list of passions there. So yeah, so fun. Blacksmithing is fun. Anyways, but I do all kinds of stuff here in town. Okay, so we're in my metal shop up on the northeast side of Gainesville, the industrial park north of Satchels. I teach classes in here, and I also take on all of my commission projects here. So I've got a whole lineup of big industrial tools along each wall. I've got welding booths for students to use. And then today is kind of an interesting day to visit because I'm building a large stainless steel sculpture for Shands Hospital, and it'll eventually be placed in the children's garden. And yeah, so I'm just in the process of working with a whole lot of different machinery and approaches to like form the components for the sculpture. Okay, so there's all sorts of fun stuff. Like, so in this shop, a lot of these parts that I'm working on at the end of either forming them or cutting them on the CNC, they need to be ground down and then sanded. So a lot of hand tools like angle grinders are involved. So now I'll show you what the power hammer does. I'm gonna leave that there for just a second. I'll turn it on. My induction forge, my new favorite best friend. It's really fantastic because I can heat material up super fast with it, and I can either hand hammer it, and I'll do a little bit of that, or I'll run it under the power hammer. I'm gonna grab a bar of steel really fast. And the like speed and efficiency of heating up the metal is really relative to its like closeness to the copper coils. So right now this bar
I think it's like such a treat to work in a public sphere where folks are gonna be like stumbling upon these projects. They're not necessarily seeking them out. And so I really just love observing the wide range of interpretations. It's like a slice of humanity, and I find it to be so heartwarming, and sometimes it's really funny and unexpected. I just think we all need more of it. Every city needs more of it, and I love that I get to dabble in that world as often as possible. It's my favorite.
That was Leslie Tharp, a blacksmith and metal artist here in Gainesville. Her works are installed in public places all over the city. That story was produced by WUFT's Emiliano Luna. Before we end the show today, we have another edition of Bird Note. Today's edition is about migratory shorebirds.
This is Bird Note. We often think of birds migrating south in the fall, but many species kick off their big trips surprisingly early in the year. Shorebirds nesting in the Arctic tundra are an extreme example. Birds like this American golden plover have a small window of time to build a nest, find a mate, and lay eggs in the short Arctic growing season. Golden plovers actually leave their juvenile young behind to begin flying south in mid-summer. But don't worry, at that point, the juveniles are already taking care of themselves and can find their own way to South America later in the year. What that means for people living below the Arctic Circle in North America is that shorebirds begin reappearing on beaches, mudflats, and grasslands in July and August. Unlike the rapid flight north in the spring, shorebirds take their time in the fall, following the weather patterns and stopping for a while when they find a good spot for food. So for shorebirds, it's like summer's over as soon as it began. Another way to look at it? Every month of the year has a big event for birds' life cycles, and there's always something new for us to witness. For Bird Note, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
That was Bird Note, a nonprofit independent media production that inspires listeners to care about the natural world and take steps to protect it. The Rundown is a production of WUFT News out of the University of Florida College of Journalism and Communications. The team that made the show possible this week includes Dave Bereswain, Emiliano Luna, Ailey Shanes, Oriana Torre, and Kira Carl. Special thanks to the Dean of the College, Hub Brown, and Newsroom Director Ethan Majok. Our trivia question this week was, many people are aware that the Florida scrub jay is endemic to the state, meaning it's only found here. But which of the following other species is also endemic to Florida? Is it A, the Florida mouse, B, the gopher tortoise, or C, the Florida green water snake? The answer? A, the Florida mouse. Also known as the big-eared deer mouse, the Florida deer mouse, and the gopher mouse, this rodent can reach a length of 8 inches, including tail, and weighs, on average, between 0.7 and 1.7 ounces. That's it for the Rundown. I'm Kristen Shermont-Spina.